This is Health First with Kathy Hart, available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We've been talking to Dr. Sanam Hafiz, and she is a neuropsychologist. And one of the things that we're learning is that this addiction has many levels and many implications. I'm going to back you up just a little bit, Sanam. And we were talking about people with bipolar or schizophrenia and that, and the addiction coming on top of it. Does that look like when you're trying to get off drugs, but you need drugs?
It's a very, very good question, Kathy, because a lot of the drugs, let's say, you know, Xanax or some of the psychotropics that are used to treat bipolar and, let's say, anxiety also carry a tremendous amount of risk of addiction. Mm-hmm. And so now you've got someone who's an addict because they have bipolar, but we need to treat them with drugs to then hopefully, help them be mentally and psychologically healthy, but also treat them in such a way that they don't feel the need to self-medicate.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where a good psychiatrist, a doctor, comes into play. A treatment planning approach between a psychologist, a psychiatrist, family members that are very careful to give, you know, prescribed drugs that don't carry a very high risk of addiction, where cognitive behavioral therapy is a huge part of the process. And again, you know, changing people's lifestyles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you work where, you know, you're being supplied with the drugs, maybe you need to take a hiatus. If you, you know, hang out in a neighborhood where your dealer is, I mean, those things are going to have to be changed because the environment is what breeds the addiction.
And Sanam, if people are dealing with these underlying mental illnesses, is 12-step enough, or is it that's when they've really got to reach out for more? Is it more difficult for them to head in and just, you know, try and work at it by just turning it over? There's a mental condition other than addiction there.
Yes, and even with serious addiction, a 12-step program is a fantastic resource. And like I said, it seems to almost run itself, but it's not enough because you need, you know, we talked about the 50% genetic predisposition and the 50% coping strategy. And without an informed professional helping you, whether it's with medication, whether it's with cognitive behavioral therapy, whether it's working with your family to set things in place that reduce your risk of relapsing, a 12-step program alone isn't going to cut it.
Mm-hmm. When do you feel after walking with your patients for, is it months or years where you really get the feeling that they might really make it, that they might break out of this addictive cycle?
The earlier, the sooner you get someone, the better the chances are of them healing, just like most illnesses. Unfortunately, like I said, addiction is an insidious disease, and loved ones can't see it. People who have it can't see it till they're really kind of deep in the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, help doesn't come till a lot of damage has already been sustained.
Uh-huh.
So I think that, you know, that is a big part of the problem. I think the other part is that you, as a clinician, I think most good clinicians can tell when they see a good prognosis. You know, the greater the incidence of having more psychiatric illness alongside addiction, the harder it's going to be for that person to recover because they're just battling on so many fronts,
uh-huh.
Right? They've got an addiction disorder. Let's say they're also, because of the addiction, now are beginning to have marital problems and their boss is threatening to fire them. And so the stress is so bad, and because they never had coping strategies and they have a natural tendency toward irrational or erratic behavior, you know, addiction is just an easy out.
Wow. You have a lot of work before you with the whole of North America being in an opioid crisis.
It's a terrible, terrible plague, and it really is sweeping the nation, and there's so much more awareness about it, but not enough treatment, not enough planning, you know, with psychiatrists and doctors sort of being a little bit more monitored by the state. I think it's getting a little better.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, there are some doctors that do wonderful work out there, but for addicts, sometimes their doctors end up becoming almost licensed drug dealers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very tricky, blurry, gray area.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other suggestions for those struggling in addiction besides the 12-step groups and finding finding a doctor, not just a regular MD, but a psychiatrist or a psychologist? What other things could they do just starting out little step-by-step daily basis?
I mean, there's so many things that, an addict can do. But again, if you're already an addict, then the things that seem to make perfect sense to you and I are not going to be as easy. So it's a different type of a 12-step program. It's identifying the problem. It's going to trusted family and friends without the fear of being stigmatized and shamed, and enlisting their help and saying, look, I have a problem. I need you to help me in this way or that way. Let's say I need you to intervene if you hear me saying that I'm going to this neighborhood. I need you to take away my debit card. I need you to hide your jewelry because I don't want to be tempted to steal and sell that to then buy drugs. So enlisting family and friends is a huge part of the recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is, helping put together a good team of health professionals who know what they're doing. So therapists, psychologists, psychologists, psychiatrists who specialize in addiction treatment, who know what they're doing, and sort of forming a team that you can rely on and being honest and upfront with them about what your needs are therapeutically, medicinally, and then finding someone who can help you stick to the regimen. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're not doomed. If you have, let's say even a genetic tendency or predisposition toward addiction, remember the other 50% is learning coping strategies and altering your environment to make better decisions.
And I hear in your voice even a lot of it comes from the hope that you will get better.
Absolutely. Positive thinking. I mean, it sounds like, that cute stuff you read in Hallmark cards, but it's true. Positive thinking, having faith that things will get better. And, speaking of faith, religion is a great tool. It's a great therapeutic modality to turn to lean on a higher force, and it does help people. There are people who truly find God and get better.
Mm-hmm. So it's not, addiction is not just at the physical level, it is at the mental level and the spiritual level, so we're dealing with all three again in working with addiction.
Very much so.
With all the privacy and with doctors and that, how does a family member approach a physician and to determine if someone could get the help through their doctor? Is there any intervention that way?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have a lot of faith in their PCPs, their pediatricians.
Mm-hmm.
Family doctor that they've seen growing up, and there's a sense of a familial bond or a sense of trust that's been established for years and years and years. And they often are the ones to make the initial referral.
Mm-hmm.
They often end up diagnosing or at least, tiding people over with an antidepressant or anti-anxiety because they've known you for a long time. So they've seen changes and they believe you, or they can suss out when you're just, vying for medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of truly, when you're truly struggling.
Mm-hmm.
But it really depends on the kind of relationships that you formed with. A lot of this does boil down to relationships.
Wow. Can you tell me a success story that's really stuck with you in addiction? One of your patients?
There's so many, and they truly are. There are success stories. I meet people all the time who tell me they've been sober 30 years. I've met people who are incredibly high-functioning, who run, amazing lives. I can't give you specifics because of confidentiality purposes.
Well, right, yeah.
I can tell you there are people who have gone on to become executives and, lawyers and doctors and successful in other ways, with loving families and friends and becoming upstanding pillars in their community. And if you hear about some of the difficulties that they had in their younger years, it's truly astounding, and it's inspiring, and you truly are humbled by it because you see how much some people have had to overcome to do the basic things that a lot of us take for granted, whether it's finishing school, getting that degree you always wanted, getting married, buying a house, and the tool addiction takes on you. People end up with criminal records, you know, whether it's because they were driving under the influence or they got into a fight or, you know, they were caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, but they happen to have something on them that they shouldn't have. And it really ruins lives, and it takes a lot to rebuild. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even with the court system, I often say that, you know, if there's a little bit more empathy and compassion, you know, the law has to do its job. Mm-hmm. But with certain people, they make that recovery so much harder. Because if someone now feels, let's say, you know, they need to drive to get to their job, and now that's been taken away from them, it's sort of, they feel like they're being pummeled, right? Mm-hmm. And that it becomes that much harder. Yeah. So I've heard and, you know, seen some truly uplifting stories.
Wonderful. Dr. Sanam Hafiz, thank you so much for being on our program today on Health First Radio. And we'd also like to thank Alan Wishart for being our producer today. And we'd like to thank all the community stations across the country that carry this program. Have a healthy and happy day.